Erika Jong, how do you counter the Republican juggernaut of nastiness, absolute meanness? How do you counter that? If you're kind, they walk all over you. What do you do? How do you fight
back?
One
of the tragedies of the left in America, for me, has always been the way we fight among ourselves. And also the way we are so uncertain of our positions. I mean, that, I think, is the tragedy of the left, that people will come out and say, you're not left enough, or Noam Chomsky is a bad guy because, you see, he wrote this and he wrote that, or we nitpick each other. And one of the strengths of the right is that they're sure they're right. They're sure they're on God's side. Of course, we're too self-critical to do that, which is one of the great things about the left, that we can be self-critical. But in order to win back political power, we're going to have to do what is the hardest thing for us, which is to unite, which means that we have to stop attacking our own, which means that we have to, in American politics, sadly, it is the center that wins the day. And although you can be critical of Bill Clinton for moving toward the center, it enabled him to be a two-term president and to do many, many good things for women, for example, and to do many, many good things in his executive orders. He did bad things, too, but it enabled him to be a two-term president. If he had listened to the screeching of the left, he probably wouldn't have been a two-term president. So I think we have to recognize the political pragmatism, and this is very hard for the left to be pragmatic. It's hard for us to be pragmatic.
The other side of it is that each individual group has their little individual thing that they're going to push over everything else. When you go to a demonstration against the war, you see hundreds of signs about other things. And it just seems to me that it dilutes it all.
It's very self-destructive. I mean, I remember back in the 70s when I was a teacher at CCNY in New York, I remember during the time of the Kent State Massacre, the students would come forward. I was lying down on Amsterdam Avenue with my students protesting Kent State. And then we would go and march on the president's office of the university. And some people would say, end the war in Vietnam. And other people would say, protest Kent State. And I remember thinking, but the president of the university can't end the war in Vietnam. He doesn't have that power. Yes, he can create need-blind admissions. Yes, there are things he can do, but we can't be unrealistic about what he can do and what he can't do. And that's where I think the left always falls down, in a kind of unrealism, a lack of realism.
The right did it as well, but then they decided not to, and it was that's when, I guess, during the Reagan years, I think Eric Alterman points out that the Christian right began being willing to push the corporate rights agenda without there necessarily being a Christian element to it in order that the entire agenda gets pushed.
It's very important to notice how they did what they did. Bush campaigned as a centrist. He talked about how he cared about the rights of, you know, gay people, and how he cared about the rights of women, and how he cared about, and he chose, you know, Colin Powell for his, quote, diversity, and he chose Condoleezza Rice for her diversity, even though she's a former Texaco executive, which is pretty much where her heart lies. And he was very smart in campaigning as a centrist. And then the first day of office, he showed himself as a Christian right-winger in his anti-abortion stance and many other stances. I think we have to be smart and copy our enemy.
It seems to me that if we were going to pinpoint one element in the United States, we'd have to pinpoint the role of the media in all of this. Because I think if you're going to mount a movement, you need to get the word out. And you can't get the word out on individualized websites. It's got to come through the mass media. How do we do that when the mass media is whoring against us?
The mass media is owned by fewer and fewer conglomerates. Those conglomerates absolutely have a political position. Their political position is less regulation. The Republicans are giving them that. When you go back and you look at these media conglomerates, they have been paying off the Republicans, you know, and giving them huge campaign contributions, and it's paid off for them. We needed more deregulation? Are you kidding?
Okay, Erika Jong, you can write a book or you can speak out, are you going to get heard? Can you become a pundit?
It's harder and harder to get heard. And in fact, I've been noticing that since 9/11, what we have on TV are white men from the 50s. More and more and more. I mean, I'm not only speaking about Cheney and Bush and Wolfowitz and people like that, but even the people who are getting on TV and mouthing off are stupid white men. Increasingly, it's as if the feminist revolution never happened. And that's very dismaying to me. But there is something very good going on, which is if you look at the way the protest against the Iraq war bubbled up before we even went to war, it happened much faster than against the Vietnam War. And the reason for that was the Internet. And when you think of organizations like Move On, which I support, and other organizations, and you see the power of the Internet to organize people, that's a new factor. Now, the FCC is probably trying to take that away from us, too, even as we speak, and to censor the Internet. And the Patriot Act is trying to take it away from us and other things. But there is still one channel of communication that is not yet censored, and that's the Internet. You can go to tompaine.com. You can go. I get Slate magazine every morning, which gives you a roundup of the papers all over the world. And then you can go to those newspapers. That's, I think, very useful. I mean, I think Slate is probably the greatest magazine that the Internet has produced. And even though Michael Kinsley is no longer the editor, it seems to carry on his tradition.